When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, he's a great fieldsman, Philip Tuffnell. He often falls over and he's brought it into his batting as well.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Vaughan and Tuffers Cricket Club podcast brought to you by The Telegraph. Ben, Michael and Phil back with you, reflecting on yet another amazing test in the Ashes. There's lots to talk about, but the bald fact is that England are now 2-0 down to Australia. There have been 72 Ashes contests in the past 141 years, and only once in that time has a team come back from going 2-0 down to win the series. Mike, Phil and I will get into why England, despite a heroic effort, ultimately fell short, some of the controversy in the match, and we'll discuss what they need to do to turn things around. We'll also get the reaction from Down Under from former Aussie bowler Brad Hogg, who has expressed some forthright views in the press over the past couple of days. And ahead of the third test at Headingley next week, we'll check in with our cricket correspondent Nick Holt for all the latest from the England camp.
Right, morning Mike, morning Phil. Where to start? Lots to discuss, hell of a test match. I guess first thing to ask was, were you entertained? And the second thing to ask is, if so, does that make up for the fact that England lost, Mike?
No, it's about winning. England are 2-0 down. It was a great test match once again. I mean, it just had so much skill, some great cricket. England weren't at the races on day one when the clouds were around and the lights were on. They didn't switch on quick enough. I thought they really fought back really well on the second day. And then there was that kamikaze batting display when the bouncer trap was set with Nathan Lyon off the pitch. England 188 for one. And for me, that's where the game was lost from England's perspective. They should have got very close to Australia, if not a lead in the first innings. It had made Australia's second innings, the third innings of the match, that little bit trickier. And they wouldn't have been chasing 371. They might have been chasing 270. And I think they'd have been hot favourites to chase that. And I think they would, I don't think it'd have been comfortable because it's in Ashes and it's England, but I do think they'd have won the game if they'd have batted better and also bowled better in the first innings. But the drama of the Mitchell Starc catch on the fourth evening, that created a huge amount of debate. And then obviously the last day was just kamikaze chaos. I've never seen Lords like it. Your ground, Phil. It turns into Galatasaray away.
Welcome to hell.
I've never seen Lords like it. I mean, the World Cup final was similar to sort of like passion vibrancy, vibrancy and everything. But no, it really was like a gladiatorial arena. It was something special. But I just want to ask, though, I was entertained on that last day, but I must admit I wasn't entertained with the continual short ball bowling.
Wasn't.
I mean, it became very repetitious, very dull, people just losing it. I think they've got to look into that. Otherwise, we're just going to get a diet of everyone on the leg side and keep shoving it up you. So I think they need to look at that.
It was an interesting one, wasn't it? Because I think Stokes mentioned that he thought it was the ball and they were going soft quickly. And obviously, there were issues with the ball last season and everybody thought that there was potentially a bad batch. But clearly that might be something that's happening. If the ball is going soft and you're not getting it moving through the air or off the ground, then what's the alternative? I
mean, it did turn into body line at one stage, you know, just with everyone, you know, on the... I've never seen fields like it, you know, yeah. on that last day, everyone on the boundary, on the, you know, days two and three when they were doing the short ball kind of ploy as well. It was just one of those test matches that you can't take your eyes off again. But that little period when they just kept bowling it short, I think it was for about, I don't know, a session and a half. I must admit, I was on the highlights show and I don't think I spoke. I don't think I got in the show, mate.
No, but I do think, I mean, if you look at the Aussies in the second innings bowling to England, they tried the short stuff and didn't get it right.
No.
You know,
no.
So England actually delivered the skill of the short stuff incredibly well. You know, Ollie Robinson... after lunch on day four, I think he bowled 9 overs 2 for 7.
Yeah.
You know, at 79, 80 miles an hour, and the Aussies didn't play it well at all. So England will certainly go for that tact.
It was sensational stuff. That last day was just, I couldn't sit still. It was just a great spectacle.
Yeah.
And even with the crowd sort of, you know, baying for blood and, you know, and sort of getting right behind Ben Stokes. When Ben Stokes started teeing off, he's some cricketer, that bloke, you know. He is some player, mate. I tell you, I've played with a lot of great players. But when that bloke flicks the switch, I don't think there's anyone better in the world.
That's the thing, the ability to go through the gears. Because, again, it was another one of those innings where he built it up slowly and then he went ballistic.
Oh.
And, I mean, where does it rank for you, Mike? I mean, it's probably not quite up there with Headingley because it just didn't quite get the job done, right?
No, but I think it was an equally extraordinary innings, even though he didn't get the win. I mean, to basically single-handedly chase down the last 200 runs on his own with a little bit of courage and help, great help from Stuart Broad. Yeah, he's remarkable. I mean, I just think the Johnny Bairstow incident... triggered him into that.
Yeah.
You know, we just don't know whether we would have said this way. You know, the Johnny stuff is still big news. Both prime ministers are involved. Everyone seems to be having an opinion. We're suddenly the nicest cricket team in the world that we would never have done it in our time. Oh God, we would never break the spirit of the game.
Never.
And obviously the Australians.
Okay, let's come back to the Bairstow incident in a minute and the spirit of the game. But on Ben first, just finish off your thoughts on the innings.
Yeah, I don't know if we would have seen that not without that incident.
Yeah,
you just right. Don't know. So actually, the incident created a special moment for us all, and England will say that if Johnny had stayed out there, they'd have won the game. Who knows? We just don't know in sport. But one thing's for sure, Ben's clarity under pressure is just extraordinary.
Yeah.
And he just picked his end. It was like a T20 innings. He was picking his end, batting from the pavilion end, targeting that shorter side down the slope with the wind. I thought the Aussies got it wrong for a long time because they were bowling into his arc almost. Yeah. Almost like under 12 cricket. Oh, he'll miss one eventually. I guess he did and Steve Smith dropped it, but... it's a dangerous ploy to someone like Ben Stokes, who's done it before on a few occasions. Once Hazelwood came to the pavilion end, I said this could be an issue because he's going to be hitting up the slope into a slight bridge. It's a big hit into that far corner, Phil, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a big, big hit. And he tried to take it on. If he gets it, obviously it goes for six, but he just lost his shape, bit of bounce. And we knew straight away, as soon as Kerry took that catch, it was game over.
Yeah. If all the fielders hadn't been on the boundary, he would have scored about 350. He was absolutely crunching them to on the fellas who were on the boundary. And he had to deal virtually in sixes because you just couldn't penetrate the field because everyone was just back on the boundary. They ran the occasional two. And I just want to reiterate Mike's point as well. I want a big shout out to Stuart Broad. He got absolutely peppered. He did. Yeah. He'll be coming off. He'll look like a leopard in that shower. I tell you, he'll be completely covered in little badges and little medals all over him. He took it for about an hour and a half, and I've been in that situation, and it's not much fun. And I think that he played his part wonderfully as well. It was. I've never been as enthralled on a fifth day on a Lord's Test match in my life. It was something to behold. I'm almost glad I was there. It's one of those days when you said I was glad I was there and witnessed.
I do think I know we're going to speak about the issue and the Ben and obviously Johnny Bairstow situation out in the middle, but without what we saw, I don't think the third test would have had anywhere near the hype that we now have.
Yeah.
So everyone will write. I mean, Henley, if you ever want to choose a venue to carry on with the raucous last day of Lord's crowd, England are going to the right place. It'll be absolutely pumping. They'll be booing everything Australia do.
Yeah.
They'll be singing all the songs throughout the whole of the game, and England will get... And then this England team are 2-0. Let's forget, they're 2-0 down in the series. I don't think I've ever known an England side have so much support, and they're 2-0 down.
No.
Usually when you're 2-0 down against the Aussies, you're getting absolute pelters. Everyone's getting sacked. There's a review just about to happen in the game of cricket once again. I've never known anything like it where... You know, this team are very, very popular. They've almost got a cult following the way that they've played over the last year. And it's a difference. There's obviously the cricket fans that have enjoyed the cricket, but there's a number of new fans that are suddenly getting into cricket because of the way that they're playing, and they're cult followers. They'll have no criticism of the Bazball. Bazball is perfect. It's brilliant. Doesn't matter that they're 2-0 down. And I'm like in the school of thought, but wait a minute, it's about winning the Ashes, isn't it? I want to win. You know, I want to get that earning. At the minute, England have got a long way to go. Well, it's almost a miracle from here for them to get the Ashes in their hand in a few weeks' time.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, let's deal with those two incidents, the two bits of controversy. First of all, the Mitchell Starc catch. I think we could deal with that pretty quickly. It wasn't a catch, right?
No, I mean, I thought at the time I was unconscious. Oh, he's got it under control. I'll openly admit that I didn't quite understand the rules of the game about the motion of the body. As soon as I read that, you know, you knew it was not out because he scraped the ball across the turf. I mean, I think if Mitchell had that catch again, he'd just turn his hand the other way and scrape it along the floor. And if it bounces out, it's not, but it stays in his hand, it's obviously out. So Mitchell was a bit too cool for school with his celebration. And the right decision was made on that fourth evening.
So the second and much bigger piece of controversy was Johnny Bairstow being stumped. We initially thought run out, but obviously he was stumped by Carey. Phil and Mike, I think you've got different views of this. So, Phil, do you want to go first?
I will go first. I haven't got different views. It's out. It is out. It's in the rules of the game, and so that's fair enough. The only slight issue I have with it is about this spirit of the game, and also that it was the last ball of the over. It was the last ball of the over, to which then, when does the umpire... Listen, I've played quite a bit of cricket in my time, and sometimes the umpires just start walking off. You know, you bowl the last ball, the umpire then starts heading off to square leg, and then after about four or five paces, then calls over, you know, or sometimes doesn't even call over. You know, I've been out there when they don't call over. It's not, you know, religious sort of thing that they do. And so he left the ball, he taps down with his back foot three or four times, he's well in his crease, and then it's the end of the over, he knows it's the end of the over, and he walks up to have a chat to his mate.
Yeah.
Now, if you have to wait every single time for the umpire to call over, we're already having trouble with over rates and what have you. We'll be out there all day. You know what I mean? So, listen, it's out.
Phil, can I? Who breaks the spirit of the game first?
Who breaks the spirit of the game first?
Yeah, if we're onto this nonsense about the spirit of the game, which is absolute garbage, because the spirit of the game gets broken every single day by every team in the world. There's things that happen within the game of cricket that are against the spirit of the game. So it's utter nonsense. So Johnny Bairstow not looking round to the keeper on three consecutive balls just to give the indication, yes, am I allowed to leave my crease? Is that breaking the spirit of the game before the Australians don't bring him back?
Why is Johnny Bairstow breaking the spirit of the game there?
Well, it's the etiquette of the game. The ball is still live in the keeper's gloves.
Yeah,
it's still alive. That's why it's out. The ball is still alive.
I understand it.
So
out.
The week before, I've just listened to Travis Head. Travis Head has told the story that the week before at Edgbaston, and he's batting the last ball of the over. The ball is whipped in. He's out of his crease. He then whips his bat back into his crease. Johnny's got the ball in his hand, and he turns to Johnny and he said, "Johnny, were you going to whip the bales off?" And Johnny turns to Travis and says, "Absolutely."
Right. Well, yeah.
And in the first innings at Lords, Jimmy Anderson wired a bob stump to Johnny Bairstow, keeping Marnus Labuschagne's bat. And guess what he does? He saw Marnus walking out machine. Guess what he does?
Yeah, but that's not Marnus. So that's a different incident because Marnus.
Why?
Because he was taking guard outside of the crease. He was therefore trying to get closer to the pitch of the ball. He was trying
Johnny Bairstow was batting out of his crease.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. He was in his crease, and he tapped back before he walked out because he thought it was the end of the over. Marnus was batting outside of his crease and therefore trying to gain advantage. There's no way Johnny was trying to gain an advantage.
No, he wasn't. That's correct. He wasn't gaining an advantage, but it is absolutely a tactical manoeuvre that I personally, I mean, I think all this high horse and... Other than thou images that we're trying to create the England cricket team to be in the heat of the moment, I would say that every single England team that I played in would have done exactly the same as Pat Cummins.
So I agree with that. I think there is a degree of hypocrisy around. But I just don't think that Johnny Bairstow is trying to gain an advantage. I've had some discussions with people about this. And the way I think about it is, I'll ask you a question, Mike. Would you give a warning before effecting a man cad run out?
There you go.
I don't think so in this era now. No,
you wouldn't. Okay. Well,
not. Look, 3 years ago for you, absolutely. But the game now knows, and we know in the game of cricket at the non-strikers end that if you leave your crease, it's a rule.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
Have done it regularly. So now, no, but a few years ago, absolutely. Yeah.
So the Australian team has a standing rule that it won't affect a man cad without giving a warning. And Stark has done that in past, give one or two warnings. I think if you're giving a warning for a man cad, you should give a warning in this instance because Johnny Bairstow is not trying to gain an advantage. And actually, in a man cad, the non-striking batsman is trying to gain an advantage. He's trying to get a little bit further down the wicket in case there's a run, right?
Just to clarify, so you think that Australia should have called him back?
I do, yeah. I think they should have given him a warning. If they see he's coming out of the crease, but he's not getting an advantage, then the right thing to do, as far as I'm concerned, is give a warning and then get him out.
Can I ask you another question? So you don't think? So you're not just saying actually? So skill. So mm-hmm. Johnny Bairstow is dozy.
Yes, I agree with that.
Three consecutive balls. He didn't look back to Alex Carey.
Yeah.
That for me is breaking the spirit of the game.
Well, I mean,
why?
If being dozy is the spirit of the game, then half the people
are going with it. He could have been run out three consecutive balls.
Yeah, but he's put his foot back two times, tapped it back into his crease to say, right, I'm back, I'm in the crease. He was in his crease by, he was virtually batting in the crease anyway.
But you've still got, Phil, I've batted for years and you still look round to the keeper.
Well.
And give it the thumbs up. You do, that's just the etiquette of the game. You do it. It's not just me getting on a high. I'm just saying the etiquette of the game has always been when you're batting, even when you've tapped back in, you just look round to the keeper just to give it a nod and then you leave your crease. It's absolutely fine in that situation.
If I'm bowling at Edenley, I am going to be trying a man cad every single one. I am now going to be taking it right to the wire.
Phil, you're not. That's all going too far. That's not going to happen. And man cads. And now, if players want to leave their crease at the non-strikers end before the ball's bowled, they are absolutely stupid in this era because we all know the consequences. It wouldn't have happened in our time and there would have been lots of warnings and maybe Australia will still warn about the man cad. That's what they said their kind of team rule is. But, you know, I don't think, I'm reading lots of stuff saying, oh, Henley's going to be like a war bath. You know, there's going to be all sorts. No, it won't. It'll be hard cricket. And guess what? As soon as it happened, England looked a better cricket team.
It set the game on fire, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, even the coaches said England looked galvanised by the situation. So everything that we said at Edgbaston for the first few days, where England just looked very, very friendly, I think England are a better cricket team when they've got this little bit of this little spice in them.
In a funny sort of way, Mike, Lords for those first 3 or 4 days didn't do him any favours because it's sort of lovely. There's that Lords hum. This England cricket team need a little bit of spite. They need a little bit of spark. And I think Henley could give it to them.
As you might expect, there has been some punchy reaction to all the drama at Lords in Australia.
So we thought it would be a good idea to talk to someone down there who can tell us what the mood's like. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by former Aussie bowler Brad Hogg. Hi, Brad. Thanks for joining us. Firstly, are you enjoying the series? And what's been the general reaction to the first two tests?
We're all loving the series, really enjoying the way that England are playing. This new baz ball approach, more aggressive approach, it's just been scintillating cricket. And even I put my hand up the first innings of the second test match when Australia went with the short pitch bowling. I thought, and Nathan Lyon had injured himself, I thought, right, I've got to put it in the cupboard here and try and wear that pace attack down. But then going back, when you're in that aggressive mode and that mindset, if the ball's there to hit, you see it, you hit it. If you're in two minds, then you get yourself in trouble. And I think that happened with Joe Root in the second innings there, where he got hit in the forearm in the ball before he got out. So you've got to be careful with it. But England are taking the test arena forward. It's more exciting, and I think we're going to get more fans to the longer version of the game. So well done, England, on that.
And what's been the general reaction in Australia? Are they because everybody here is loving it. They're on the edge of their seats. Is that the case in Australia as well?
Oh, definitely, definitely. England declaring on day one of the series, that was just scintillating stuff. And we're all talking about Pat Cummins, the third best bowler in the world, coming into one of the lower-ranked batsmen in the world, Crawley, for the first ball, and he's got a deep point. We had three deep fielders in the first 10 overs of a test match of an Ashes series. And we've got the best bowling attack going around. I don't care whether the wicket's flat or not. If you've got the new ball in hand, you're aggressive against two batters, Duckett, who's just new to the scene, and Crawley, who's struggling to keep his spot. I just thought we were a little defensive there, and England didn't take the initiative.
Yeah. So, I mean, how is that sort of playing to the Australian mentality? Because you're probably used to having grown up and through your playing career for the Australians to be the alpha dogs. I mean, here it is, as you say, England being a bit more aggressive. Is that sort of, is there sort of almost a bit of a cultural debate going on in Australia?
Oh, a little bit of a cultural debate. But at the end of the day, we're sitting back here in Australia and we've won two test matches, but yeah. England should have won both of those test matches. The yeah. first test match, it was Bairstow missing the stumping of Green straight after the dismissal of Head. And then he dropped a relatively simple chance a bit later on, just before the new ball came, and then broad bowled that no ball to Khawaja. Those three dismissals, especially the Green one, cost you the test match. Yeah. Now we go to test two. If you look at the no balls and the buys that have occurred, if it wasn't for them, you would have been over the line as well. So this series is closer than what everyone thinks. The only worry I have on an entertainment perspective is Ben Stokes' fitness. He's got to be fit for England and he's got to be fit for the entertainment value of the game, because if he's not, the game's worse off. Yes, I want Australia to win, but at the end of the day, entertainment comes first. And that's where I'm at now.
So the Lord's Test, there were several controversial points, and I know you have. We've been discussing it, Mike, Phil, and I have been discussing some of them, and I know you have a different viewpoint. But I'm also keen to get the views from Australia, what people there are talking about. So I think three really. There's the Steve Smith catch, there's the Mitchell Stark catch, and then there's the Carey stumping of Bairstow. So what were your views on those three incidents?
Mitchell Stark catch, definitely out. He had control of the ball before he's touched the ground. And if you had a back view of it, I would have thought that there was part of a few fingers underneath the ball there. So for me, that was in control. He had total control of the ball. Whereas Steve Smith didn't have control of the ball. You see the two fingers under the ball when it's touched the grass. You can see the ball touching the grass there. If he had a better grip on it and controlled it all the way to his chest, definitely out. But because it bubbled to on his chest, not out. When we go to the Bairstow incident, as a player, and I heard Vaughnie saying that, I'd probably in the heat of the moment thinking, right, that's out. But now I'm on the board of the WACA here and I'm in an administrative role. I look at it differently. I'm looking at the entertainment value. But I'm also... I'm looking at it in a fresher mentality. I'm not involved in the game. I'm just looking at it from afar. And I looked at it and I thought, this is not right. It's not right. Bairstow has been doing it for the whole innings. I think he was doing it for the test match before as well. So it had become the norm. The keeper's taken the glove, he's passed it off to the fielder. They planned it three balls before that happened. He did it twice before they did it on the final ball of the over. For me, I think they took it too far. If it happened the first time that Bairstow walked out of the crease in the test series, fair enough. But not when he's done it 100 times because it's become normalised. And you go through it as well. I heard McDonald say, oh, it's just the same as throwing a ball down the leg side if Tuffers is bowling or I'm bowling with someone charging out of the crease. No, it's not. The batsman is not in control of his body. Bairstow's in control of his body. Yes, he didn't look behind, but as I said before, it's become the norm. He scratched it, he's on balance, and he's just going down. He's not taking advantage. But then you've got to look at the umpiring, and I think this is the biggest discussion that we've got to have, because the catchers, diabolical, because they're interpreting it differently. And then you look at the two on-field umpires in this particular Bairstow incident. Both of them aren't watching the actual incident where the stump has been knocked or the bars have been taken off. The umpire at the bowling end is taking the cap off the buckle.
Yeah.
Gaffney, out point, is walking in with his head down. But they've both looked at each other and virtually said, that's over. But none of them have looked at the actual incident. Then they've gone up to the third umpire. It's not the third umpire to decide whether it was called over or not. It's the two officiating umpires out in the middle.
Yeah.
And if they thought that it was the end of the over, it's the end of the over.
Yeah.
You don't have to say it. As Tuffer said earlier on in the podcast.
Well, Brad, can I ask you a question? Do you really think in that split second? So I reckon there's about 3 seconds, right, from the ball going to Kerry. He takes the ball so quickly and he throws it. It's probably 3 seconds. Do you really think the umpires are going to call over after 3 seconds of the ball going past the batter?
I don't think they would. I wouldn't expect an umpire to do that. But it's just the reaction that the umpires had. Bairstow's ducked. He's in the crease. And we've talked about the Labuschagne incident. Labuschagne's out of the crease. That's fair game. You're going for the stumping there. Bairstow was batting in his crease, didn't move out of his crease, didn't lose balance. He's done it before, and the Australians have normalised it by not going for that type of dismissal earlier on. It's a bit like a man cat. We've seen these man cats happen at the end of a game when the game's on a knife's edge. We don't see it happening from the first ball. And that's where when you talk about the spirit of cricket, that's where the spirit of cricket comes on. It's where the actual incident, which is a controversial, actually happens. And that's where I sit on it. It's the normal. I'm not calling out the Australians cheats because the law says.
Nobody would.
So I'm going to ask you both, Phil and Brad. So you're out in the middle there. Brad, you're feeling for Australia. In the heat of battle. And Phil, you're feeling for England. And by the way, it's the second test in Australia. You're 1-0 up. So the second test, Adelaide. And that happens to your team at that moment. What are you doing as a player?
If I was playing for Australia and it happened to us, I'd be up in arms.
No. You've misread that. The question is, you're out there in the middle with the Aussies, so you're a player.
Yep.
And Phil, you're a player for England, exactly the same situation, but the reverse scenario. An Australian batter's batting and we bowl a bouncer and we run him out or stump him. What are you both doing as players in the heat of the battle?
You're both in the fielding side, right?
Yeah, both in the fielding side. So I'm creating the same scenario that Pat Cummins had for both of you. What are you doing as players?
Well, in the heat of the battle, I can understand it. And we're in the privileged position that we can all, as Brad was saying, we can sit back and look at it now, you know, a couple of days later and what have you. I just think in that situation, when all the boys are around, you're all patting each other on the back and you're going, yeah, come on, yeah, lovely, lovely, lovely. I think then that perhaps the skipper has got to try, and you're a skipper, Mike, and I know it's difficult when you're in the heat of battle. I think he's just got to then try and step away from that situation very, very sort of quickly, which is very, very difficult to do, I know, because of the emotion and what have you, and then just think to himself and give him, or the umpires should then give him the opportunity to have a little bit of clarity of thought. The umpires should then come up to him, and as you say, it's not a third umpire's decision or anything like that. The umpires should come up to him and pull him aside for a second and say, right, you have got the opportunity now to have a quick think about this, and do you want to carry on with this, or do you want to call him back? That's what they didn't do, and that's what they should have done. They should have then helped him out a little bit there, yeah, just to give him a little minute to calm down and say whether he wants to carry on with that. If he then wants to carry on with it, it's in the rules, and he can say, no, I want to carry on, and I want him out, and that's absolutely fair enough.
You haven't answered my question. What would you do as a player in that situation? You've just passed it on to the captain. I'm asking you as players, what would you do?
Well, that's why you get the big bucks, mate, as captain. That's why you get the single room and everything, because you're the captain.
There's not one England player. There may be one or two, and I can't really think of the top of my head who would not have just gone, it's out. We're getting that wicket. I'm sorry, we're in an Ashes series. The Ashes is hot. We're 1-0 up. We're going to go 2-0 up. I'm sorry, you're out, Johnny. You've been very dozy.
I totally agree with you, but I just think sometimes, you know, you've got to read a situation. But Josh Butler did it, didn't he? Josh Butler had the opportunity to do it when he was over there, and he said no in the one-day series, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And it was
an obstruction call, wasn't it? And he could have appealed for it, and by the laws of the game, it would have been out, but he decided not to. And very brilliantly, he said, we're over here for a long time.
Do you also, Phil? I'll ask you again another question. I'm going to ask you lots of questions. If this was on the other foot, and England had produced that bit of, I'll call it a piece of skill, because the keeper takes it in the stumps. It's still a piece of skill to get the ball back onto the stumps by the keeper. Do you think we would be absolutely lambasting the team, or would do you think we'd go, well, it was a great piece of cricket thinking?
Yeah, I'm not lambasting Australia at all here, Mike. I'm not having a go at them at all. I just think, if anything, I'm having a go at the umpire.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and Brad brought it up. The role of the umpire here, and you made the point that the umpire wasn't at square leg, it was at point. But he's not looking at the crease, right? He's moving because he thinks it's over. And he should be saying to Cummings, I actually didn't see that because I was on the move because I thought it was over.
But they did check. But Ben, they checked it with the third. That's why we had a delay.
What were they checking with the third umpire? They could have been checking that he was out, and clearly he was out. The only people who know whether the umpires think it was over are the on-field umpires. They don't need to check with the third umpire. Did I think it was over?
But Ben, the ball is still live. The ball was in the keeper's glove for a millisecond. He releases the ball. The ball's still live.
It is. I do agree. But the umpires have to decide when the over is has finished.
But the
right?
ball was obviously still live.
Yeah, but they had clearly decided the over was over because they were on the move. They weren't looking at the play.
Ben.
I'll bring another thing up. Like if I was playing and I was with Ricky Ponting, Adam Gilchrist, and Matthew Hayden, even if I was playing now, I'd be taking the wicket. There's no doubt about that. But sitting from afar, the umpires have got to take control. Now, when a fast bowler comes in or a spinner comes in, they go, oh, you're close to the line there, mate. Just you're pushing the line. Yeah. Now, if they're observing the game and they're seeing Johnny Bairstow do what he's doing, you know, they should be able to go up to the batsman and say, look, Johnny, just a little bit more respect for the game because the ball's past you and you're walking into your crease a little bit too early before we call dead ball or before we see it actually deemed as dead ball. So you're putting yourself in a situation here which could cause a bit of an issue down the track. I think, you know, this is a wake-up for the umpires, especially with the catches. I'm stepping in here, right?
I'm not having the umpires at fault for it. I'm sorry. It's the players. It's Johnny Bairstow's doziness, and it's Pat Cummins, the Australian captain, who could have said, "You know what? I think we're against the spirit of the game here. I'm not having the two umpires being picked on." Well, I mean, give them a breather.
What are they there for otherwise? I mean, the whole point is that this is an ambiguous situation. That's why there's so much controversy. And if the situation is ambiguous, it needs to be umpired.
Yes.
Absolutely. No, I'm sorry. I'm not having the two umpires at fault at this situation. Because everything gets reviewed anyway, so it goes upstairs and it comes back. It's out. So the letter
it's
of
not a review.
But yeah, Bill, the letter we're agreeing, the letter of the law, it's out.
Yeah, we're
so
all
how the hell
that.
Can the two umpires out in the field be at fault? Jesus, give them a breather. God.
Well, the third umpire doesn't know when they called dead ball or called over. So,
correct.
it's not the third umpire's decision. It was the two officiating umpires out in the middle, whether they thought it was dead ball or not. Whether they thought it
but
was.
But, Brad, it can't
That's
be a.
Why.
Brad, we've all played. It's not a dead ball when the keeper gets the ball in his hand and he whips the ball back to the stumps. It's not a dead ball. The ball is still live.
We've only got Brad for a certain amount of time, and I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one because I don't think we're going to come to a conclusion.
What I actually love about it is that there's so many different opinions about it.
Yeah.
And the good thing about it is that it's happened to you guys, and there's people there that see Johnny Bairstow out fault, and I see it differently from an Australian perspective. But I'm seeing it from afar. I'm not actually in the cauldron. And as Vaughney said, if I was out in the middle, I'd be accepting the wicket. But if it's pushed the boundaries of the spirit of cricket or it's not in the right vein of the game, the fielders out there, they're in the heat of battle. We've got 30 management staff sitting on the bench. So if the head coach think there's something wrong there, he can send the message out and say, no, Johnny, you're going back. So take it away from the players. If you're looking at it on an Australian perspective or any team that goes through these situations, that's what the management's there for, to control these heat-of-the-moment situations so that we keep the game moving forward in a positive spirit.
The one thing I will say is that I do think Australia could have dampened and taken a bit of fuel off the fire after the game.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, it's all been added because they've said, absolutely, we were in our right. England have said, we would never have done it. And I'm not too sure about that either because we don't know what England would have done in that situation because it didn't happen to them. You know, so let's be honest, it's very difficult for anyone to really make a judgment. But I do think, by the way, that the Aussies have kind of just gone, nah, we're in our right. To not even just dampen it down slightly has certainly created a hotbed for Headingley. It's going to be hot.
I think that the whole issue here, we agree to disagree, but at the end of the day, when you've got something controversial like this, was a player taking advantage of a situation to better his team? Johnny Bairstow wasn't, and that's why I think there's a lot more controversy to it than a man-cad. That's where I sit on the situation.
I tell you, Brad, no wonder you're on the board, mate. No wonder you're on the board now.
Don't know about that, mate.
So obviously, Brad, you were a great spin bowler in your day. Another massive talking point from Lords was Nathan Lyon, who's obviously pulled up lame and is now out of the series. How big a difference do you think that's going to make?
Oh, it's going to make a huge difference. Nathan Lyon is the backbone of this Australian attack. There's no doubt about that. If you look at the last year and a half, he's bowled 30% of the overs. Pat Cummins is the next out 16%. So you've got that experience. But Murphy is a very good bowler. He came into Indian conditions, adapted really well, changed things up with his grip to suit those conditions. The big issue for me now going over to England is getting used to that Duke's ball. We're exposed to it over here in Australia with the odd shield game here and there, and we've got balls to bowl in the nets. But it's completely different. For me, the seam's different. It seems a little bit slipperier than a kookaburra, harder to control. So can Murphy control it, and can he bowl tight like Nathan Lyon and bowl the overs like Nathan Lyon? And I think he can. So I don't think we're going to miss anything there. And Nathan Lyon, that is a big issue too. The Australian management sending him out like they did, I thought was quite disgraceful. And then people saying, well, England bowlers shouldn't be bowling short to him. Well, hang on. He's gone out there. He's saying that he can handle it. And he's put in the fire. Now, if something happened to Nathan Lyon, which ruined his career or damaged it even more, workplace and healthy, work health and safety back here in Australia, the insurance claims would be massive. And I can't believe that if you're going to replace a batsman for the concussion rule, because that's a batsman's, how can I put it? He hasn't read the ball after training for so long. He hasn't read the ball. It's his misreading of the ball that's caused the injury. Whereas when it's a physical injury to a fast bowler or a spinner like with Nathan Lyon, they can't control that. And you don't want a scenario where they're out there trying to help their team win because they know if they don't, then the other bowlers have to bowl more overs. I think we've got to look at it. There's a replacement player for everyone, every injury, or there's no replacement players.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. What are we expecting from Todd Murphy? What sort of kind of bowler is he, right?
Oh, look, he's very similar to Nathan Lyon in a sense. I've only really seen him in England. He's only just come on the scenes over here in Victoria. But the one thing I really love about him, he works hard at his game. He asked questions. He went and did a bit of work with Stephen O'Keefe before he went over to India. He's planned before he's gone to England. He's one of those. He's like an Ashwin, as such. He's making decisions or preparing for those next opportunities that might be there. If he didn't play in England, he would have worked his guts off to make sure that he was ready for that one-off test match. And at the end of the test series, wherever Australia are going, he'd be working on the nets for those conditions as well. So he's probably going to be one of the most prepared youngsters that come into the lineup, and that's why I think that he's going to do a wonderful job for Australia. Don't worry about the wickets. It's about keeping it tight. If he keeps it tight, then the wickets will come for him. He doesn't have to be or act like a Nathan Lyon, and I think that's the problem with Australian spinners since Shane Warne's left. We're expecting to find that big wicket-taking option that bowls tight. You're never going to find that. Shane Warne was once in a lifetime. But I'll tell you what, Nathan Lyon has come close and is probably up there with the greats of spinners that we've seen in the history of the game.
Right, Brad, I don't know whether you've listened to the pod before, but we have a section towards the end of our interview where Phil comes in with some either-or questions.
Right, yay. Let's go for it.
Thank you, Ben. Okay, here we go, mate. Aussie rules, which I found out you were an umpire for a short time, eh? Aussie rules or rugby?
Aussie rules.
Aussie rules. Oh, good love. Love that. Straight in. Rajasthan Royals or Calcutta Knight Riders?
That's a hard one. Rajasthan Royals because they kick they pick juniors to develop, and that's better benefit for Indian cricket. Calcutta Knight Riders because you're sort of in the Bollywood lights there.
Yeah. So which one?
Oh, Calcutta Knight Riders, it's going to give me more opportunity as I get older.
Righto. Okay, then. The bowling of Andy Flower in 03, which Gilly said was the ball of the tournament, or getting Flint off stumped in 07, World Cup, the wrong one.
Andy Flower.
Andy Flower, ball of the century. Love that. A ball of the tournament.
I can tell a story about that.
How did he do it?
Well, basically, Darren Lehman, Ian Harvey and myself had to do the planning for Zimbabwe, and we were sitting there and they were talking about Andy Flower for about 30 minutes, and I said, look, this is getting boring. Just give me the ball and I'll get him out with a flipper. And Darren Lehman, I was only new to the team at this stage, and Darren Lehman's just gone, Hoggy, shut up. No more input from you. And Vaughnie knows Lehman pretty well. So anyway, it came to that first ball, the second over, and I'm out the top of the mark, and John Buchanan is in the back of my head going, just bowl, stock ball, first ball of an over. And I'm just feeling that I've got to bowl the flipper, and I thought, I've never listened to the old man on the family farm out home. Why should I listen to John Buchanan? Came in, got him off stump, and I'm down there celebrating, but I'm trying to hold my lips because I'm yelling out to Darren Lehman, "You'll listen to me now, won't you, buff?" with a few other choice words.
Well, here we go then. Very good. Next one, wrong'un or flipper?
Flipper.
Okay. And then, well, very, very, very apt for this conversation. Mancad or Carey Stumping?
Mancad.
Good lad. Well done, mate.
Brad, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much,
Brad.
Boys.
Cheers, mate.
Good to see you, Vaughnie. Good to see you, Tuffy. Thanks, Ben.
Great to have you on.
Cheers, mate.
We are joined again by the chief cricket correspondent at the Telegraph, Nick Holt. Nick, you're up in Headingley already, aren't you? With the schedule as it is, have you seen any of your family recently?
Very briefly, waved goodbye this morning. That's par for the course in these sort of series, these back-to-back games. But actually, I'm quite glad that it's a back-to-back game because it means that the narrative moves on again.
Yeah, definitely. You've obviously been to a few press conferences. There's also news out of the camp about Ollie Pope, I believe.
Yes, Pope's out, not just out this test match, but out the rest of the series with a shoulder injury. He's obviously had a history of those in the past. He's had two operations on his shoulder, so it wasn't a surprise that he wasn't playing here. But a surprise, actually, that he's actually not going to be fit for the rest of the series. Hmm. England are going to name their team on Wednesday, so they haven't actually confirmed at this stage who will play, but it looks pretty certain it will be Dan Lawrence batting at three, which is high up in the order for him. The only other option is whether they shift everyone else up, Joe Root bat three and Moeen Ali come in lower down the order. I mean, England have got two choices to make. It's whether they pick Dan Lawrence, who has batted well for Essex. He scored 150 in his last championship game, or whether they actually decide that taking 20 wickets is more important. It seems at the moment they're leaning more towards the extra bowler, which would probably ease Moeen Ali's path back into the side, with Mark Wood bringing that extra pace in if he comes in for Jimmy Anderson. And maybe they'll look at Robinson as well because of his workloads. But yeah, those are the two choices. Lawrence batting at three, which he doesn't do for his county, or picking the extra bowler because they're worried about taking 20 wickets, which in this series has been a challenge for them.
Right, yeah. So no inkling about what might be happening with the bowling lineup, because we were talking about the fact that the bowlers have got a lot of overs and obviously a lot of short stuff bowled at Lord's. So might be a little bit tired, and maybe there'd be a possibility of rotating the squad.
Be surprised if Mark Wood doesn't play. I think they want that pace in the team now. This pitch, they peeled back the covers about 10 minutes ago, and honestly, it was hard to work out which was the pitch for the test match. It's so green. It's like the rest of the square. Obviously, it will be cut again tomorrow. But Headingley is a pitching up ground. It's not a banging in short ground. So I'm not so sure whether the bouncer thing will be such a factor here. The one thing that they have said, though, the reason that it's become a bit of a bounce war is because the juke ball is going soft after 35 or 40 overs a game. And obviously, you know, if that's what's going to happen with this current batch, then that suggests that it will play a bit more of a part than it normally would on a ground where it seams and swings, particularly if it's cloudy.
Yeah. Now, there's some chat about the balls last year, wasn't there? And there was a theory that there was a bad batch and it might have been because of COVID or something like that. Clearly, that's carried over to this season?
Yeah, I did a story, actually, an interview with Dilip Jadoja, who owns his juke ball company, and he blamed COVID and the cows not being fed properly during COVID in Scotland, so where he gets the leather from. And this year, last year, they were falling apart very quickly. And I don't know, you remember, there were multiple ball changes. This year, they seem to just be going softer. There are more ball changes, but not as many as there were last year. So they're just losing that hardness, which obviously doesn't help Jimmy Anderson, who a few weeks ago was the world's number one bowler. And now he's averaging 73 and probably not going to play here on the pitch. It looks like it, as if it would be suit him down to the ground.
Yeah. And what's the general mood with the England camp? Have they calmed down from Lord's, or are they using some of the perhaps injustices to fire them up?
Oh, I think they're using it to fire themselves up. I think that it's also a useful way of papering over the cracks publicly that actually, you know, that there are some poor passages of play in both test matches, and that's the reason why they're 2-0 down. They chose Joe Root today for the press conferences, and obviously, you know, Joe is Mr. Diplomatic. He negotiates a press conference very easily and very well and without actually saying anything that's going to be controversial. So they've tried to back away from it, but obviously he did point out that it's firing up Johnny, his old mate, who's got that stare, that look in his eye this week, playing on his home ground as well. So they just keep reiterating they wouldn't have done the same thing.
Yeah, an angry Bairstow is a dangerous Bairstow.
Well, we've seen that before. Normally he's angry at Michael Vaughan because he's normally criticised him in the Telegraph or on the BBC, and that's fired up Johnny. I think sometimes he's done it deliberately, particularly with him, with Broad as well. But they're Broad and Bairstow, two narky cricketers who were up for the fight this week. But it takes more than that against this attack. I mean, this is a top-class Australian team, and they will be obviously handicapped by losing Lyon. The fact they put Todd Murphy up today, he's speaking right now to the press, suggests that he's going to come in, and he took quite a few wickets in his debut in India. So a useful sort of replacement. But England, you know, they target the spinners. He's going to have to be strong this week, and the boundaries here are not that big.
And obviously, Ben Stokes has got his eye in.
Yeah, Stokes has got his eye in. I don't know whether he wouldn't have played that innings if it hadn't been for that incident. I think that completely fired him into form. I mean, and that's great for England. The two big players have got hundreds after the first two tests, Root and Stokes. And that doesn't normally happen when England are 2-0 down in Ashes series. I just asked Joe actually about that and said, you know, you've been 2-0 down in Ashes series before. Does it feel different this time? And he said, yeah, absolutely, because we've not been on the back end of hidings this time.
Yeah.
And in the past, when they've always said, oh, we're going to come back, we can do it, it's always rang really hollow. But and even though you can't really see them winning three games, you do sense that they have got a chance of getting something back this week.
Yeah, no, excellent. Let's hope so anyway. Nick, cheers. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. Cheers.
So we've got to talk about the third test and who might be in the England team. And I think we have to talk about Jimmy Anderson, don't we? I mean, I'd step in front of a bullet for that guy, but I did think he looked a bit below par. He got two for 117 in what looked like quite helpful conditions. He was England's most economical bowler in the first innings, but the least economical bowler in the second innings. And there was one over towards the end where he got sort of slapped around a bit. And I don't know, are we witnessing the end of an era, Mike?
Well, yeah, because he's 40, so he's not going to play that much longer. I don't think he'll play at Headingley. I think both teams will rotate the bowling attacks. I think to bowl on these wickets week in, week out, particularly with the short stuff, and that's what I look at with England. They're going to go short to Australia, so surely Mark Wood has to play. You know, if you're going to bowl short, you need Tong and Mark Wood. I don't know how Ollie Robinson is. You know, I don't know how he's going to show. You only got 3 days in between test matches, so it's not easy. And it might be that you see a couple of changes. If everyone's fit, I would just go Mark Wood for Jimmy. See where Jimmy's at the week after or the week after that. England have to win at Leeds. You know, obviously, to win the Ashes, they have to win the last three. They can't think about winning the last three. They've just got to win one, win the next one. And I think they need a little bit more pace. So I think Mark Wood for Jimmy Anderson. I'm not too sure about the spin. Headingley's a pitch that's different to when I used to play. I think there is a little bit of tweak there now. But I'm not too sure I'd play Moeen even if he is fit. I think I'd go with all the seamers because Ben clearly can't bowl 20-odd overs a day. So they need that extra backup in the seam if they're going to do this aggressive short pitch bowling method. So I'd go just Mark Wood for Jimmy Anderson this week. That's if Wood's fit. He hasn't played for months and months, so it's got to be a risk to play him. But if he is in any way, shape or form ready to play, he must play. I personally wouldn't play Moeen Ali if the pitch looks like it's just a normal Headingley wicket, because Joe Root's off spin can be used. And England look to me like they've got a method of potentially upsetting the Aussies with the short stuff. And I don't think the Aussies will be too fearful of facing Moeen Ali's off spin, but you know, played any cricket and he's obviously got that dodgy finger. So I would go all the seam again at Headingley.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was impressed with Josh Tong. I'm impressed with Josh Tung. I think he did a good job.
Yeah, he's good. And he's obviously got an engine on him as well, which will be useful. Yeah. A stat for you. After two tests, Australia have faced 654 more balls than England and only scored 45 more runs. So, I mean, obviously, that's, what's that, 110 more overs the England bowlers have bowled.
Yeah, which puts it in the legs. I mean, that's the one bad thing to baseball is that you're out there bowling quite a lot. You know what I mean? And it goes into the bowler's legs and gets them tired out again. But it was a phenomenal Test matches. Crikey, if we get Test match cricket like that, it's just going to be sensational. Another three more to come, please, for me. Going to be wicked. Can't wait. Can't wait for Henley. Very rare, you know. I don't think I've ever been so excited to be 2-0 down.
Right, that's all from us today. Big thanks to Brad Hogg for joining us and to Mike and Phil too. If you're new to the podcast, Mike, Phil and I will be here every Wednesday throughout the summer. Previous episodes from this season with the likes of Justin Langer, Adam Gilchrist and England legend Geoffrey Boycott are all available online right now. If you have any feedback, questions or comments, the address is cricketclub@telegraph.co.uk. Please drop us a line. We'll be back with you next week following the Headingley Test up in Leeds. So until then, goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.